Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Because when people took risks or they made mistakes, they got berated, right? Their performance evaluations weren't as good. But yet, because they wanted to innovate, because they wanted to honor people's different perspectives and bring these perspectives into their organization to enhance the organization, they realized they needed to change that part of the culture, right? They actually needed to create a culture where people felt empowered to make mistakes, which is hard for a lot of organizations because mistakes also require us to take the time and make the space for those mistakes to take place.
Right? Voices with value, stories with soul, tools for transformation. This is Innovation Insights. Innovate so you do not stagnate. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we're honored to have an incredible leader in the field of organizational transformation, Dr. Nicole Yadel Butts. With over 25 years of experience in diversity, equity, and inclusion, plus human resources and organizational change, Dr. Butts has held key leadership roles as the Vice President of DEI, Chief Diversity Officer, and Human Resources Director. As the President and CEO of NLYB Solutions, Nicole has developed the SHIFT framework, a powerful step-by-step approach to creating sustainable cultural transformation in organizations. Her work has left a lasting impact across industries, from professional services and healthcare to higher education. Nicole is also a best-selling author, contributing her expertise to The New C-Suite Leader and her latest book, SHIFT, a five-step framework for transforming organizational culture, which has topped charts in multiple business categories, including organizational culture, business ethics, and diversity and inclusion. In this episode, we dive into the power of cultural transformation, the role of innovation in organizational change, and how leaders at all levels can drive meaningful and lasting impact. We will also explore large-scale innovations and small, everyday innovations that can reshape workplace culture. So, if you are ready to reimagine your organization, inspire your team, and lead with clarity and confidence, this conversation is for you. Nicole, welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, and our paths we figured out crossed years ago, I think probably during the pandemic, during some series of webinars helping everyone cope with the pandemic. And then we reconnected just recently over your new book. And so I'm just really thrilled to have you here. You have such great energy and knowledge too. So thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here.
You have an impressive 25-year career in organizational change with a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion and human resources. I always feel that it takes a very special person to work in human resources. So what inspired you to focus on HR and human resources in your career?
I got into human resources actually as my second career. I started out as a teacher. And I moved into human resources from a very altruistic place, right? From this place of wanting to help employees in the workforce live their best, fullest lives and making sure that the organizations were honoring people. And so that's what got me into human resources. And one of the things I discovered after I got into human resources from this very altruistic space was that as much as I think most HR people go into it for similar reasons, when we get there, we realize it's still a business, right? And it's figuring out how to help employees make the most of their time at work and helping organizations stay in compliance. And it didn't turn out quite the way I expected because I was thinking, I'm just going to get to go and help everybody be happy. And it doesn't always work out that way. But the other thing I discovered, and I suspect many, many of your listeners have discovered the same thing, is that, you know, organizations are really good about putting together their core values. They're not as good at living those core values. And so what I have really spent most of my time on in the HR space and the people and culture space is helping organizations turn those stated values into lived values so that the day-to-day lived reality of people is in alignment with what those organizations have said is important. So that's really how I've spent the majority of my time in this people and culture space.
That's great. That's great. And has there been any pivotal moments in your work that you've, okay, this is really how I'm going to approach this? Because HR professionals oftentimes get a really, really bad rap within organizations. And you are bringing, again, very positive vibes and wanting to help people. And so was there a pivotal moment to your approach when you realized that, this is not quite as what I thought, this compliance or other challenges that you have in HR?
There have been many pivotal points, but I'm going to focus on the most recent one, which was 2020. Because in 2020, we had two seismic events happen that changed the way we work and the way leaders lead. We have the murder of George Floyd and the subsequent social and racial reckoning that took place. And then we also had COVID-19, which changed not just where people work, but also how people work. And one of the things that came up during that time that was so pivotal for me was realizing that leaders were really struggling. Those two things had leaders unmoored, uncertain, and really unprepared to lead through those two seismic events. And they couldn't figure out, one, they didn't have internal structures to gird them, really, right? And to really help them figure out who as a leader they needed to be and how to be the leader they wanted to be. But there also weren't any external structures within the larger organization for them to lean on. And so I was serving as a chief diversity officer at the time. And so I had leaders coming to me saying, I simply don't know what to do. And at the same time, colleagues saying to me, how do you do this work? Right. And their question about how do you do this work was really kind of twofold. One part was, it's very emotionally taxing work. So how are you able to maintain your sense of self and your center doing this very emotional work, particularly at this time? But then the other part of the question was, how are you able to be successful? Because again, they were feeling unmoored and they were feeling unprepared. So it was from that I really took some time to think about what is my approach, right? Well, how do I stay centered? How do I stay connected? And why am I able to be so successful in this work, even at this very, very challenging time? And I spent some time reflecting on that because I am a strong believer in the need for intentional pauses and purposeful reflection. And so I did that. I took some time to really think about what is my approach to this work and why am I successful at it? And it was during that intentional, purposeful reflection that the book was born, because it allowed me to spend some time really unpacking and analyzing and mapping out my approach to how you turn those stated values into your actual lived values. And so that was the most recent pivotal point for me, were those seismic shifts that happened in 2020.
I love what you just said too about intentional reflection.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, because we're in such a society of go, 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 go. And even when we, you know, we both got onto the to record this, we're like, oh, okay.
You need a minute, right? You need a minute to kind of come back to center. Yes.
I know. No, you ask me, how you doing? I'm like, I'm doing. And just, we're bombarded with so much information and so many things. And then AI is just impacting the way we do everything. And so what are some strategies to be intentional with our reflection?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, one of the things that I find happens very often is we're on autopilot, right? And we keep doing the things we've always done the same way we've always done them. And we don't stop to really think about our thought processes, our guiding principles, our motivations. And so we just kind of react. I call it reactive doing, in fact. And so the need to pause and think about what is important to us, why it is important to us, and how we align our behaviors and our decision-making and our priorities with those things that we say are important to us. And it's real easy if we don't do that reflection to get off track and not even realize that we've gotten off track, right? Because again, we're in autopilot. So a couple of strategies that I find helpful. One, walking for me and meditation. So I start my mornings with a morning walk. And a lot of people exercise, right? And it's interesting because I don't actually refer to this as exercise because I hate to admit this, but it's not like I'm out here, you know, lifting weights and doing Zumba classes and sweating up a storm. My walks are 5 a.m. when it's usually still dark outside. I don't use music, so I don't have on any headsets. I'm not listening to a book. My walks are almost meditative in and of themselves because they give me time to just kind of wake up and be present with myself. And then I meditate. And those two things for me give me the time I need to really think about my intentions for that day, how I align my behaviors and my interactions with those things that are important to me. When I don't do it, when I don't have my morning walk or my morning meditation, good for maybe 2 or 3 days. But by day 4 or 5, and I haven't done those things, I'm absolutely on autopilot, right? Well, the strategies for me are to intentionally take the time out to stop and do it, and to ask yourself challenging questions, right? To challenge your own thought processes. Ask yourself, well, why do I believe that? Or why am I aiming for that? Like, really ask yourself intentional questions and challenge your own status quo. Be able to listen when other people are talking or making decisions and trying to think about who they want to be, who they have told you they want to be, and help them stay in that space.
Thank you. Yes, that's great. And you're actually the second person I've interviewed this week that's talked about meditation and the importance of that in their lives.
Yeah. It makes a big difference for me. And again, I can maintain if I don't do it, but after a few, I know I haven't done it.
Well, and it sounds like this process helps you with shifts, and I'm going to lead into your book, The Shift. And you know, as we did our prep meeting, we talked about organizational shifts. But then I also know you're doing some work on some individual type shifts too. But let's start with your book. And what was you've alluded to it some, but you know, really what made you say, okay, let me just jump in here and develop the framework, the shift framework?
Yeah. So I shared kind of where I was at that moment in time. and working as a chief diversity officer and having a colleague, really multiple colleagues actually ask, how do you do this work? And truth be told, I have been using this approach in my own personal life and in my professional life with teams for decades. Never took the time to really analyze it and map it out so that others could use it. So I did take the time to sit down and really analyze, how do I do this work? What is my approach? And what are the philosophies behind it? What's some of the research behind it? And on research, I want to say this too, because it addresses this question. One of the things that I've noticed, and my dissertation research really showed this, is that one of the things that's happened for leaders in the last several years is that leaders have moved from being strategic to being more tactical, with really a strong emphasis on day-to-day operations, quarterly results, and I'll say putting out fires. So
hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Whereas leaders used to take time to, as a leadership team, talk about their why, not just the what, but the why they do the things they do and what they're trying to create from kind of a bigger picture, the focus has really shifted to the how, and it's become very tactical. And that's taken the time and the intentionality away from organizations understanding why they exist, who they're trying to serve, the way in which they want to serve them, the way in which they want their organizations to exist and to feel for people. And I think that's been unfortunate. And one of the things that I was able to do in the book was really talk about what as leaders, where you need to start as leaders to determine why your organization exists, not from the standpoint of just, well, we create widgets, right? But why is that important for the world? Why are you there? And how do you want to function in that space? Not just how much money are you trying to earn or how many employees do you need to have, but what do you want your employees to feel? How do you want your employees to interact and engage with one another? How do you want them to interact and engage with their clients? So this framework allowed me to work through all of those things. So I did. I unpacked the approach I had been using, looked at the philosophy, looked at the research behind it, and was able to put together, I think, a very detailed roadmap for leaders to use to figure out how to shift their culture from where it may be and oftentimes haphazardly and unintentionally where it is to where they intentionally want it to be. Because here's the interesting thing about organizational culture. If it exists, right, whether you intended to create something or not, organizational cultures exist. They're typically haphazard. They're typically things that just came up. But what's interesting about that too is as the leader and leaders, you've created that culture. Whether you meant to create it or not, it's the culture that you've created. What I'm asking leaders to do is take a step back and to pause and reflect on the culture they want to create, and then take the steps to transform what has organically been created to what they intentionally want to create. And that's where the book came from.
Now, was this book based on your dissertation research too?
Good question. It wasn't based on it, but there was a lot of information that I gathered during that dissertation process that wound up going into this book. So one of the things, so my dissertation specifically was on the role of leaders in creating organizational DEI, right? So I looked at the emotional intelligence, I looked at the skills and knowledge that's needed to actually create DEI. But in my research, one of the things that really showed through was the importance of the executive leadership team in creating those spaces. Again, oftentimes things kind of come up organically. So it's one thing when a lot of your DEI work is kind of grassroots and your employees are asking for things, as opposed to the leader saying, here's why this is important to us, what is important, why it is important, and aligning behaviors to those things that they say are important to them. So what the research really showed is that you can't create, whether it's DEI or something else, you cannot create those things without the direct express influence, direction, guidance, buy-in, support of your executive leadership teams.
That makes sense. That makes absolute sense. I really appreciate you talking a little bit about your dissertation. And as someone that's still in academia and have doctoral students, and it's always nice to have examples of how you can take a portion of your dissertation and make it actionable, because sometimes they do sit on the dusty shelves of the library or on ProQuest or wherever they are out there. But so to be able to take parts of that. And so I really appreciate that.
So let me just stick to that, because like you said, you have a lot of dissertation students. As you're doing your research, you're going to find things that are fascinating, right? Even though that may not be the core of your dissertation study, you're going to find things that are interesting to you. Go back and revisit those things later when you finish your dissertation, when you finish school. Go back and look at those things. And there are going to be a lot of things that come up that you can drill down into more deeply and create systems around, or articles, books. So yeah, don't just put it on the shelf. Go back and think about the things that excited you as you were going through your research process and revisit them.
Thank you. That's such excellent advice and such a way to innovate from your dissertation. So I love it. So could you give us those five steps of the shift? How do we put those into practice?
Yeah. So SHIFT is an acronym, and each of the letters stands for a step in the process. So the first step in the process is S, set your North Star. Setting your North Star is about identifying, again, what is important to you, why it is important to you, and the things that get in the way into that. There's always something that gets in the way of us living into the things that we say are important to us. And what we don't often do is take the time to figure out, what are those things that are my barriers? So S is about, let's define your North Star. Where are you trying to go? It's not where you are today, but it's where you want to be. So that's the first letter. H is for here, determining where I am right now in relation to that North Star. So the H is kind of like you're at an amusement park and, you know, there's a map and there's that great big X on the map that says you are here, but you know you want to go over there. That's what the H is. So this is where you assess where you are in relation to your North Star. Now, let me say this about that piece. From an organizational standpoint, oftentimes organizations start with the H. They start with assessing their organizational culture or their employee engagement. The reason I have H as the second step and not the first step is because what often happens when you collect all of that data first and it's not in relation to a North Star, you get so much data that you can't do anything with. And the data starts dictating where you want to go. So you're not being intentional about setting your North Star. You're being reactive on, well, here's what the data showed us. So this must be important. This must be something we need to be focused on. And it becomes overwhelming and it becomes strategic because you're reacting to what the data tells you. When you analyze or assess your here second, you're only assessing your here in relation to what that North Star was. So if I said that collaboration, for instance, is important to me, I want to assess in relation to that, to know how far away I am from that North Star and not get so much data that it becomes almost untenable, right? And I always find that interesting, right? Because, and I've seen it happen countless times, there's all this data. And then you also can get analysis paralysis, right? Where it's like, there's too much, I don't know what to do with it all. So assess based on the things that are actually important, based on where you're actually trying to go. That's the information you need to collect. So that's why H is second in this framework.
If our organization has their vision or their vision statement, is analyzing that part of this, the set, the North Star, this is our vision of where we want to be. So some people might go back and look at that vision statement. Is that, am I on the right track? Or
you are on the right track. Well, let me say this. My work is really around organizational culture specifically, right? So oftentimes, well, almost always, organizations already have their mission statement. They also have a vision statement for the overall organization. And that's really important. And yes, we want to incorporate that into our culture. But what I'm asking organizations to do is say, okay, if this is my mission and this is my vision as an organization, what is the culture that I need to create to achieve that? The company is. But what's the culture that I need to create in order to reach that mission? And that's in alignment with the things we as a leadership team say are important to us and the way people work and interact. I'll give you an example. And I mentioned collaboration before. I've heard lots of companies say that collaboration is important to them. Yet they still have these siloed teams. They still have a lot of competition. They still reward individual efforts, recognize individual efforts, but they don't reward team efforts. They don't recognize team efforts. They don't recognize cross-functional developments or teams. So, and all their tools and systems are for someone to get work done, but not to collaborate with other people. So simply saying collaboration is important doesn't mean that you've created the structures that support a collaborative environment. So if that's something that is important to you to meet your organizational mission, we need to go back now and figure out what are the structures that I need to put in place, the systems, the tools, the interactions, the rewards that I need to put in place to make sure that collaboration really is a day-to-day reality within our organization. That's why I said, too, we have to look at the things that get in the way. So if one of the things that gets in the way of collaboration is, well, we only get bonuses based on individual performance reviews, that's going to be a barrier to collaboration. So yes, you want to look at your vision, but you want to establish those values, those behaviors that you want within your organization to help you achieve that organizational mission. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I don't work with companies on their business strategy, right? I work with companies on their culture strategy.
Culture. That's good. That's good. Do you find, I know we still have three more letters to go. I have another quick question. Do you find that companies are willing to work on their cultural structure?
Right? I mean, I find that companies don't automatically know that they need to work on their culture. And once they realize, and they realize this in a lot of different ways. Sometimes they realize it because their employees are telling them. Sometimes they realize it because they know that they're out of alignment with it. But what happens is, again, they put together these values, these core, but they never aligned those core values with actual behaviors. They never said, okay, if this is what we say is important to us, again, what are the things that are getting in the way? And how do we overcome those things? I go, well, this is important. And we tell people it, but they don't know how to live into it. Once leaders and employees usually know, right? Employees are the ones who we say we respect each other, but that's really not what happens. Once start to see and understand either from their employees or from personal experience that those words are just words, but they're not actions. when they start to realize, okay, we have some in our culture. We haven't created what we said we were going to create.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So I, what is the I?
So I stands for illustrate your path forward. So what we've done so far, we've set our North Star. We've said, this is where I'm trying to go. We assessed and we said, but this is where I am in relation to that. So I now know the distance between these two things. So I is for illustrate the path forward. How do I close the gap? And this is where you start putting together your programming, your initiatives. And I'm using those words on purpose, and I'm going to come back to them when we get to F. This is when you start putting together the steps that you need to take to close the gap. What are the knowledge and skills and abilities that we need to cultivate within the organization? What are the tools that we need to put in place? How are we going to measure success? How do we define success? How do we measure for success? So this is where you start figuring out what are the exact specific steps, goals, objectives we need to develop and implement to close the gap between those two things. And then we have F. F is for forge ahead. Now, I said earlier that companies often, they assess before they set their North Star. There's another thing that companies often do. They often start doing stuff without knowing why they're doing it. They put together programs. They put together initiatives because they think they're supposed to be doing something. But you know what I'm saying, right? If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. That's what happens with Forge Ahead, right? People just start doing things, but they haven't determined why they're doing them, where they're trying to go with them, where they're trying to get them, how they measure for it. And so the F is, now that I know where I'm trying to go, now that I know where I am in relation to that, and now that I've put together the strategies to close the gap, did I lose you? My computer went black, and probably went black because I mentioned a while ago.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Now we can actually start doing the work, which we put together in I. Because in I, we figured out exactly what am I going to do to close the gap. Now I can start doing the work. But if I start doing the work before I know those other three pieces, I'm just doing busy work, right? And we've all been in those spaces where we have something that we have to get done. We have to get it done right away. Well, why am I doing this? I don't know. The VP just said we need to do it. Right? We get stuck in that busy work. And so when it comes to culture, you really want to figure out, again, what is it you're trying to achieve and how do you achieve before you start? So that's it.
That's great.
Right. So the I is illustrating the path. That's where you actually figure out what exactly needs to happen. And F is the implementation of that.
I like it.
The T is for take a look around, right? And so anytime you take a journey, and let's be clear, this work is a journey. This is not something that happens overnight, in a week, in a month. This is a journey. And so whenever you take a journey, when you think you've arrived, you want to just kind of take a look around and like, okay, I got here. I made it. Is it what I thought it was going to be? Do I really want to be here? Right? Is there somewhere else I want to go next? So the T is when you really reflect on, one, have I gotten to my North Star? Is it what I expected? What did I learn along the way? What else do I need to go back and grab hold of and bring along with me? And we have the opportunity to say, okay, this is great. I have achieved this. Can I expand on this? Can I make this bigger, broader? Or where do I want to go next? Now that I've gotten this done, what's the next thing I want to achieve? So that's what you keep.
I like it. Do you find that many companies move from or just jump in at H and then they jump over to F?
It wasn't going to be a cuss word. I promise it wasn't going to be a cuss word. But absolutely, yes. They do. And I'm sorry. See, we said we're just not clocking. That's what comes up. I'm sorry. You might need to edit that part out. But yes, they do. They do these assessments again, and they're assessing everything, right? And they get all this data back and they go, oh no, we have to fix this. Oh no, we have to do that. And so they just start doing stuff. But again, they haven't figured out why, if it's really important for them, right? And how to achieve it. And so that's when you get that busy work or that reactive doing. So yeah, they do H and they do F. And that's when we feel crazy. And that's when we feel misaligned. And that's when we feel disconnected because we don't know what the bigger opportunity is.
Right.
Yeah.
So as leaders, what are some misconceptions that leaders have about shifting organizational culture?
I think the first and greatest misconception leaders have about organizational culture is that it's something that just happens, that just already exists, and they just need to figure out how to navigate. And the reason I say that's a huge misconception is because, again, what research shows is that leaders, a leadership team, has the ability to change and impact what the organization culture. They're setting the culture, whether they know it or not, they're setting the culture. And so you want to be intentional about setting that culture. So the biggest misconception is that they think that they don't have the influence or the power or the control to change the culture. And I find it fascinating because oftentimes when you think about business leaders, they often have a master of the universe sense of their ability to impact sales, right? Or hit their quarterly earnings. They have this master of the universe sense of operations, but they don't apply that same sense of influence to culture. But yet they have a greater impact on the culture than anyone else. So I think that's the first greatest misconception that they have about it, is that they think that they just have to navigate what already exists. I think the other misconception is similar to what I said before, that leaders have moved away from strategic and moved more towards tactical. And I think they don't understand or recognize that their employees see that, their employees know that. And, you know, we oftentimes as leaders, we think about motivating people financially. And that is important. But there's been a ton of research that shows that what really motivates people is meaningful work, that they're engaged in meaningful work and that they have an impact on that meaningful work. So part of being intentional about setting the organizational culture is also making sure that people understand the why, again, behind the organization, the why behind their work, the impact behind their work. They want to get paid and they want to get paid fairly, but they also want to have an impact. They want to make an impact on something that's meaningful for them. So when you're thinking about setting that culture, that's a critical thing that you need to consider and incorporate.
So do you feel this shift from strategic to tactical happened during the pandemic, or was it before then, or when did it
started happening long before then? But I think it really got solidified during the pandemic because it changed the entire way that we work, right? So all of a sudden we had to fix this problem. It's so fascinating too, because, you know, employees had for years for flexibility in work and the ability to work remote. And because many of our managers and leaders have only really experienced being physically present with one another, right? And we kept saying, well, no, we can't really do that, but how do you still build spirit and team engagement and how do you collaborate? So there were all these reasons that we have put in place as to why people could not work remote. And then we had to change overnight. We had to change that overnight. And so any strategic thinking, conversations, dialogues that we had been having turned very quickly to tactical very quickly. How do we get people online? How do we get them the tools they need to still interact and engage with each other? And so, no, it's not a new phenomenon, but it feels stuck right now. It feels stuck.
Doesn't it? It really does.
And leaders know it, right? So when you start asking leaders questions that go beyond, you know, their sales goals and their operational efficiency, and you start asking questions about why do you do this? Why do you do it this way? What innovation? What have you thought about this differently, right? When it comes to things like AI and other kinds of technologies, they're like, yeah, of course we have. But when it comes to, again, this idea of culture, they haven't thought about it. And they haven't figured out, and it's really showing up a lot right now in this DEI space, because we have a society, we're in a place in society right now where there's so much pushback against it. And leaders who have said they believe in it, many of them are finding themselves in a place where, yeah, I believe in it, but I don't remember why. I don't know how. So they're backing away and they're turning away from this work that they have said has been important. And I don't think they're turning away because they don't think it's important. I think they're turning away because what they did not prepare for was the pushback and the resistance and the challenge. And anytime we have set our North Star, anytime we have said, this is what I'm trying to achieve, we have to recognize that there are going to be barriers to that, no matter what it is. There are going to be barriers. We need to, and we can prepare for those barriers. Most of them are not something we can't foresee, but we don't take the time to foresee. We just say, oh, well, that's where I'm going to go and that's what I'm going to do. We don't think about those roadblocks and those barriers. We need to be thinking about those roadblocks and those barriers up front so we can determine how we are going to address them when they inevitably come up, as opposed to saying, oh, never mind, I got to step back because I wasn't expecting it. You should have been expecting it.
Yep.
And you could have planned for it, right? And so what we feel such conviction for, now it's getting hard.
Yeah.
And we're prepared for that.
Well, I think, you know, I think some groups of people have been prepared and have like, okay, well, sure, there's pushback about this. We're not surprised. And we're going to just keep on doing what we need to do, but others haven't. And so change is hard. It's overwhelming. And so how do these organizations continue to be transformational and impactful in the work that they're doing? And even if they still believe in their core that DEI is important, but they can't publicly shout it from the rooftops.
You know, it's a good question. And, you know, one of the things that I find interesting in a place where I feel as though some of our DEI work has almost in a sense set itself up for this moment is we talk about it as a thing, right? We talk about it as something separate, and it's never been something separate, and it shouldn't be something separate. And that's why my focus is on organizational culture. How do you create cultures where people can thrive? How do you create cultures where people do feel as though their ideas are not just welcomed, but enabled? How do you enable people sharing their ideas? How do you show that you value those ideas? So this isn't about a separate program or a separate initiative. It's not even about a separate office. When you think about DEI. It should be. It is the way in which your organization simply functions. It is the culture. It is the goals and the behaviors and the values and the belief system that are embedded in your organization that support your organization achieving its goal and support the people in that organization. It's not something separate. So, you know, I think part of your question was like, how do they do that? It has to be, you have to start with that North Star. If you don't have that North Star, then, and you haven't figured out exactly how you're going to reach that North Star, which again is your I, how do we illustrate this in your head? It's very easy to get off balance. It's very easy to step outside of those things that we say are important to us and not even realize that we've stepped outside of them. We've never aligned the behaviors with the words.
Right. Yeah.
Did I answer that question?
Yeah, you did. You did. And I, you know, I love that you say that. It just doing the right thing shouldn't have to be some type of programming.
It shouldn't be programmed. And doing the right thing can be very hard. It can be hard. But knowing for your leadership team what those things are that are important and how you demonstrate them. Easy to say, this is what's important to me, whether it's from a personal standpoint or your organizational standpoint. A different thing to be able to say how that shows up in the world, right? And that's where we have to make the decision. What is important to us and why is it important to us? Why has to also be emotional, right? Because we don't, things aren't important to us from a logic standpoint. We think they are, right? They even have a lot of research on this in terms of marketing. People don't make decisions about like what car to buy from a purely logical standpoint. We make decisions based on emotion and then we justify them with logic. And that's fine, right? That's fine. But what that means is that we as leaders have to understand that our values have to have an emotional component as to the why. Then we need to figure out, now that we know what's important and why it's so important to us, how does it show up in the world? How do I demonstrate it? And that's part of setting your North Star. And if you don't determine that up front and you don't know the things that are going to get in the way of that, whether it's personal fears, whether it's, again, pushback from someone else, if you don't forecast the things that are going to get in the way of you showing up in the world the way you want to show up in the world, when those barriers come, you don't know how to address them.
That's true. Thank you. That's so helpful, especially at this time of the world, because a lot of people are confused, not sure. But like you said, you set that North Star and think about how you show up.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Yeah. And so we've talked a little bit about innovation, and I'd like to get your take on kind of large scale innovation versus small scale innovation, especially within workplace culture.
Yeah. So I think I shared, well, I didn't share this. So small scale innovation versus large scale innovation. In an earlier book, I contributed a chapter to an earlier book called The New C-Suite, Civil Leadership in Action. And what I talked about was a small scale innovation, really, which is how do you welcome, enable, and value employee ideas So that's part of creating an inclusive space, right? That's just one thing you can do to try and create an inclusive space. And a small scale innovation that I shared is I was working with an organization where this idea of risk taking and making mistakes, they said was important, but it was not valued at all.
Right.
Because when people took risk or they made mistakes, they got berated,
right?
Their performance evaluations weren't as good. But yet, because they wanted to innovate, because they wanted to honor people's different perspectives and bring these perspectives into their organization to enhance the organization, they realized they needed to change that part of the culture, right? They actually needed to create a culture where people felt empowered to make mistakes, which is hard for a lot of organizations because mistakes also require us to take the time and make the space for those mistakes to take place.
Right.
And sometimes they cost money.
And sometimes they cost money.
Right.
But they wanted to create this space. So a small scale innovation that we did was to create an electronic or digital failure wall where I had the leaders go in to this failure wall and say some of the mistakes they made, what they learned from those mistakes, and what the outcomes were, right? So let's talk about the mistake, because we've all made mistakes, right? And what happens if we don't talk about our mistakes, we pretend that we haven't. And then when someone else makes a mistake, they feel bad because they think no one else has done. I asked the leaders to go in and start talking about the mistakes. And I don't mean mistakes they made 20 years ago. I mean mistakes they made last week, right? So go in, and when you make a mistake, put it in the failure wall. What was the mistake? What did you learn from that mistake,
right?
And then invited other employees, after they started to see that the leaders were doing this, invited other employees to also start doing the same thing. So people would go in. And what was happening too is people were able to post along with that failure and say, oh, I had a similar experience. Here's what mine looks like. So now we had this space that was open to the company where people could put in their failures and the things they learned from the failures. And also have people share, well, here's something you could also think about, right? What we found with that small scale innovation was a year and a half later, this was no longer just something that was being done on this electronic failure wall. People were in meetings and they were talking about the mistakes that they made. And they were giving one another feedback and providing one another with alternative ways to approach it. They were telling each other what they learned from it. So you went from a space where people couldn't make mistakes to where mistakes were now something that was a part of the ongoing conversation. So that was a small scale innovation that really led to significant culture change within that organization.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that, because that's one thing, you know, when I started Innovation Insights, I think some individuals were thinking, oh, innovation has to be tech. It has to be something big. You're solving some world issue. And so then this year we rebranded and we made the I lowercase in innovation to help communicate that we like the small innovations and they can have big impacts. And what you just shared really did.
Yeah. Yeah. Small innovation. And you're right. They don't just have to be technological innovations, right? Those small innovations, even just in some of the words we use, right, can really have a huge impact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. So we've talked a lot about leadership within cultural change. What can members of an organization do to help impact cultural change too?
Great question. And so for the book, my primary audience for the book is executives. However, I really want people, and I put this in the book, to think about their immediate sphere of influence, right? So you may be a manager of one person. What if the culture you're creating with your one person that you engage with? You may have a team of 10. You may have a division or a function. Whatever is your sphere of influence, you have the ability to create the culture that you want to create within that sphere of influence. And as an employee, even if you don't have a leadership title per se, or a direct leadership role where like maybe you're leading other people, you still have the ability to impact culture by asking some questions. So you can begin to ask questions of your leaders, of your team. Why is this the way we're choosing to do this? Not from a way of trying to say we shouldn't be doing it this way, but let's talk about that. Let's talk about why this is our approach, right? Is this decision in alignment with something else, right? So if there's a value that we hold as an organization and we're making a decision that you're not sure is in alignment or you want to make sure is in alignment, ask the question, is this decision in alignment with our values, right? How do we make sure that we're making this decision in such a way that it's in alignment? Have we thought about the things that might get in the way? So there are a lot of questions that you as a member can ask that will begin to challenge the way people are thinking and broaden the way that they're thinking so that you can impact that culture.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great advice. And it also made me think about when you said your sphere of influence, personal branding, and that's something that we talk a lot about at Innovation Insights too, is branding, telling your story. So are there aspects of your work, your background, your expertise, the shift that could be used in helping define one's personal brand, do you think?
Ooh, great question. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm smiling because you're making me think about the different ways in which this framework can be used. And so, yeah, when you think about your personal branding, I do think it still starts with your North Star, right? Like, who is it that I want to be and how do I want to show up in this space? And if this is the way I want to show up in this space, how do I put language around that? Right? Because we're positionality, right? Like, how do you position yourself? Your North Star should still dictate that brand. Here are the kinds of things that are important to me. Here are the things I'm working on. Here are the people I'm working with. Here's the way I want to show up in that space for those folks. And those kinds of questions are really the foundation for your brand. And then again, okay, if that's who I'm saying I want to be, and that's the way I want to show up in the world, how am I showing up in the world right now?
Right.
Is it in alignment with that? How am I get it in alignment? So that's still your S, setting your North Star, your H, where am I in relation to that? And then how goes the gap between how I want to show up and how I am showing up?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so I get the sense that there might be another version of the shift coming out for individuals. I think we just got a preview of something here.
We did. So, you know, the current book is on organizational culture because that's the space from a professional standpoint I've been working in for so many decades, right? Well, is that people and culture and organizational change. That's why that was the audience and the venue, so to speak, for the first book, that organizational culture. But the second one really is on your personal transformations, right? I'll be real honest. You know, I read a book a number of years ago that I loved by an author named Dolly Chook. She's a professor at New York University. And the book is The Person You Mean to Be. And I love the book because, one, it's very conversational, right? And it's very personal. But she does say, you know, there are people who we want to be or that we mean to be. But a lot of times we fall out of alignment with. So what shift does is it says, okay, so if I know who it is I'm trying to be, who I want to be, one, I need to know why that's important. And then how do I actually become that person? And so the second book is really on that personal transformation. Here's who I say I want to be in the world. Here's where I am in the world. How do I close that gap?
Excellent. Well, we will have to have you back when the second book releases.
Please do.
Well, you've given such great advice throughout this interview. So thank you. I do want to ask you to define innovation. You've given some excellent examples of it, but do you have a definition that you kind of live by or?
So innovation for me, and I think your idea about kind of the small I and the big I are really important. So innovation for me is really about challenging our status quo, right? It is about reimagining our possibilities, reimagine our possibilities and removing the barriers that get in the way of that possibility. Right. So it's about challenging our personal status quo. It's about challenging the status quo around us. It's about reimagining the things that are actually possible for us. And instead of seeing challenges, we see the possibilities, right? Instead of seeing those barriers, we see possibilities. I think innovation ultimately is really about curiosity. It's about curiosity. It's about adaptability. And it's about the courage to think differently. And I'll share with you, you know, one of the things that I open my book with is this notion of consciousness plus courage equals transformation. Because consciousness is about our intentionality. It's about knowing again where we're trying to go, why we're trying to go there, the things that are going to get in the way, the things that have kept us where we are. If we have consciousness, and we are clear about where we're trying to go, and we couple that with courage, the ability to take the steps and the actions needed, we can get transformation. One or the other alone isn't going to get us there, right? Because consciousness without, it causes anxiety, right? It causes almost defensiveness, because what happens is we know what's right, but we don't have the courage to take the steps. Courage without consciousness is recklessness, right? It's like I action, right? That's when you get fools rushing in, right? Because I got all the courage in the world, but I don't have the clarity. Right? So you need both of those things. So for me, consciousness sets the journey. Courage ensures the journey. And with those two things, you can get to transformation. So for me, that's what innovation is really about. It's about having the clarity and the courage to see new possibilities. To change the limitations of what we think our possibilities are, right? And to remove those barriers. That's what innovation is to me.
I love that definition. I love that you're, you know, really grounding it in courage, because it does take courage, because you might fail, and that's okay.
That's okay. So much when we fail.
Absolutely.
And we have to be, willing to learn those lessons in that. Right. And anticipate. Yeah, we're gonna fail sometimes. We may fail more often than we succeed. Right. What am I going to learn in that failure? So that's why for me it's those two qualities, both the consciousness, the clarity, and the courage together that gets us to that innovation.
Well, it makes me wonder too, do we need a different word from failure? I mean, maybe failure is the bad F word that we need to get rid of. And
No, that's a really good point. And I think that's a good point. Like, do we need a new word, or do we need to destigmatize the word failure, right? It was an attempt. It was a try. It learned from that effort. So that's a good point. I think we need to work on that. Do we need a new word, or do we just need to take it back? Do we just need to take it back and reclaim it or repurpose it?
Yeah, that could be. But yeah, because there's a lot that comes with that F word, failure. Woo.
Absolutely. And we feel like, and what happens too, you know, we try something and it doesn't work. We'll say it failed. But what happens is we then internalize that and we become a failure. It's not that effort didn't work out the way I expected it to. It's that I internalize it and I'm now a failure.
Yeah. Or you're labeled that by people. Yeah. I was like, wow. Oh, well, just big thank you for being here. This has just been delightful. And I think I'm doing this podcast so I can just learn and learn and learn from brilliant people like you. So Dr. Nicole Goodell-Butts, thank you for sharing your expertise and your positivity and the shift. I mean, just a great framework. And as we talk today, I think we realize other uses for it. And it's going to be fun to see what you come up with. Because I think you're going to be like, okay, we can apply this to this situation or this group of people. And that's what a really great framework is, that it can be substantive across many, many areas.
Great point. Thank you for that. I needed to hear that. Thank you.
Okay. Nicole, what is the best way for people to get a hold of you and get in touch with you?
Great. So the best way for people to get in touch with me is from my website, and it's simply www.nicolebutts.com, NicoleButts.com. There's also my LinkedIn webpage, so you can look for Nicole Butts there. Yeah. So I think those are the two best ways. And when you're on my website, you can connect with me, send me an email, and we can talk. We can chat.
Wonderful. And we'll make sure that all of this information is available in the show notes too.
Thank you.
So to our guests, thank you for being here. I want you to think about your biggest takeaways from this episode and share your thoughts about that on social media or with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and comment on the podcast. That will help us continue to bring impactful conversations like this to you. Stay connected with us also on all of our social media platforms or visit our website. And as we sign out, as I always say, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.